Welcome once again to the Liberty Lounge. I'm Johnny B. Y'all know me from YouTube, and we are so glad you're a part of this, and thanks for finding us however you found us. I'm joined first with, y'all know him, it's Jared from Guns and Gadgets. Jared, best thing going on in your gun collection right now?
Ooh, that is a good question, because CMMG today announced the release of a Han Solo-like 22 cal blaster. I emailed our friend Mike as soon as it dropped, and it sold out as soon as they dropped it, but I was able to secure one.
I got one as well. I hit Mike, and I said, dude, I need this CMMG blaster. And he said, dude, your name is on it. And instantly, I mean instantly, he goes, they're also completely sold out. I tell you who is not a sellout is Anthony. Y'all know him from the Armed Scholar. He's a lawyer. He's a lover. He's a friend. Anthony, you got a safe right there behind you. What's the best thing going on in your collection right now?
Ooh. I was toying with some of my ARs recently. I had a Daniel Defense upper that was just kind of sitting around. And then I had some other optics. So I put the Daniel Defense on a lower. And then I put a Vortex Razor on it on a Unity mount. And then I put a Unity offset with an Acro on it. So I still need to go mess with that a little bit. That's probably it's a heavy build for sure. Yeah. But that's going to be a fun one to kind of toy around with. And I also, my local gun shop, I saw that they just had a deal on a Radian rifle complete. So I'm probably going to end up buying that soon too.
Just because any of the three of us need even one more thing for our collection.
What are you, my wife?
Oh, the answer is
all
no.
Right. What are you, the feds?
What does that have to do with anything? All right. My favorite thing that's going on right now, because of course, Super Tuesday was this week. And moving forward, I think one of the trends that we're seeing is I feel like there's a little bit of a shift going on in the climate of our country. My favorite thing that happened was, and I get this, a lot of folks are not in our world. You have folks that watch YouTube and folks that don't watch YouTube. And so if you're not part of that world, you may not know this individual. His name's Brandon Herrera, and he is a friend of all of ours, and he's a YouTuber, and he is the AK guy running for Congress. And yesterday he made a little noise. Jared, what was your take at a Super Tuesday with Brandon Herrera?
It's absolutely huge for one of us, a commoner, if you will, like the founders intended, looking to challenge somebody who is entrenched as an incumbent who is a rhino. Even though he is a Republican, he voted for the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which is looking to bribe states into getting red flag laws. That's got the ATF looking to stop private sales. He's also Texas 23 is the congressional district, has the most border with Mexico in Texas. And Tony Gonzalez, the incumbent, has not voted to stop the influx of illegal immigrants. And Brandon was able to force a runoff with him, which is absolutely, it's huge. It's the shot heard around Texas.
Anthony, do you think he's going to be able to raise the money? I know that a lot of folks are looking at the war chest as we move into this runoff on May 28th. By all accounts, Gonzalez has about $1 million on hand in cash right now, and Brandon's down to 10% of that. Do you think he's a brand new a kid in this? If he was elected, he would be pretty young, which I think is doggone awesome.
Yeah.
But do you think money's going to be a major concern moving forward?
I don't think money will be a big concern for Brandon, because what does the money really buy you in these elections? It buys you attention, and it just buys you an audience. All of that Brandon already has. He has millions of subscribers on YouTube already. And that's not even accounting for his other social media accounts on Instagram, Twitter, the friends that he has, you know, us in the community who are pushing him. We have millions of viewers on our own right. He's on one of the most popular podcasts himself, the Unsubscribe podcast. He has connections with everybody within the conservative community. He works with a ton of gun companies as well that have their own audience base. So I don't really think that money, like the $1 million itself, is going to be a big issue, because obviously Herrera's already shown by pushing getting this to a runoff that money isn't necessarily now. Money, of course, in some ways, in some election processes, is a big deal, but I don't think it's going to become a barrier for Brandon, because he already has the attention that he needs. He already has that audience base. Now it's just going to be getting everybody to mobilize behind him. And he's shown that he's able to do this. And Brandon's an awesome guy. And at the last range day that they had down in Texas, I was there in San Antonio, and I asked him directly. I was like, man, you're crazy. Why would you decide to do this? He's like, I don't know. And if it happens, I will still be shocked. And but Brandon's an awesome guy. We've all had the luxury of hanging out with Brandon and talking with him. He's an awesome stand-up guy, and I have absolute confidence in him. If he ends up getting in there, he's going to do the right thing.
I totally agree with that, because his stance on the Second Amendment, on the Constitution, on freedom, I mean, he is unrelenting when it comes to our rights. Why or how did he stand out this well in this race? Because it's not often somebody that has absolutely no experience in the political arena steps in, and he's headed to a runoff. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, Jared, what helped him to stand out? Why is he, I think, and in my opinion, so different than the other candidates?
I think Americans as a whole are just sick and tired of the norm, right? The past 3 years of people pouring through the southern and northern border, regardless of how you think about it, the effect on our country has been astronomical. Inflation is through the roof. People can't buy what they could with the same amount of money 4 years ago. People are struggling to buy to put food on the table, to pay bills, people are sick and tired, and they want somebody who is not part of the problem to help be part of the fix.
But do you think people are pissed off too? Because I think we are sick, we're tired, we're broke, we're hungry. There's a lot of things, but I think people are upset, don't you?
100%. Yeah, I'm pissed off. I don't even live in Texas, and I'm pissed off. I left the Commonwealth of Massachusetts because I was pissed off for the last 15, 20 years of the way it's going. And with that said, I don't live in Texas, but I did send another $500 to Brandon Herrera's campaign today. And wherever you're listening, you can do that too. BrandonHerreraForCongress.com. Help one of us get into the big house and start to make changes.
Anthony, you ever thought about running? I know that our audiences, I know mine does, I'm sure y'all's does as well. And I know Jared's does for a fact. They're always going, Johnny, you should run for office. Johnny, you should. And I'm like, no. We have what's called skeletons, and I don't want those skeletons going public. I'm also not made for prime time, and I have issues with caffeine. But you're in California, and I think way too often, to be very clear, we put all of California in one box, and it's not. It is so much more stratified. We talked about that in episode one. But in your neck of the woods, have you considered maybe as you move into your 30s or 40s or 50s about running for office out there?
I think it's one of those things that maybe you have to be built to. I wouldn't say I would never do it. I get asked
all the time first.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, yeah. Maybe if I moved to Tennessee.
If you did, what would you run on? Like, what's important to you? What do you want to see in your candidates right now in 2024?
So I think if I were ever going to run, it would be in California, where I think we need the right people, even if it's at the state level, in the state legislature, that can at least push back against some of the nonsense narratives. Specifically, of course, I'll run on firearms rights and things like that. Immigration, of course, in California is huge. Spending. Overspending and taxes in California is just out of this world. It's insane. I guess if I were to ever run at a national level, maybe it would be also in California. One of my representatives here in my area, he's a House of Reps guy, is David Valadao. He's technically a Republican, but in the same way as Tony Gonzalez, he voted in favor of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. He's voted in favor of red flag laws multiple times. I put him on blast a lot on social media because you can't run in my specific area where I'm at. And like Johnny said, in California, it's not all blue. There are some very deep red areas in California, including where I'm at. It's all ag, it's all dairies, it's all, you know, kind of good old boys who want a true Republican. And we put people in place hoping that they're going to be a true representative of our area when they go, you know, to DC. And then you have these guys voting for bills like, you know, the Bipartisan Safe Communities Act and other immigration related stuff. So, I mean, long story short, would I ever do it? Maybe. I would never say no, but it's just not on the forefront of my mind right now. I'm still young. I'm trying to do a lot of other things. But yeah, I would never say no.
You know, like Johnny said, I get a lot of people just about daily that ask me to do the same thing. And I will say, I have had the conversation with my wife. I can't run until I'm a resident for 3 years in Tennessee. But you never know.
TikTok, mofos, it's coming.
And I'll say this for everybody who's listening.
Are you prepared to announce right now? Is this the moment? Are you announcing your candidacy?
No, not yet.
In 3 years. In 3 years, I'm coming for you.
But what I want to say to folks who are listening, like everybody has skeletons in the closet. That makes you an American. It makes you a human being. And you know what? Have I angered some folks over the years? Yeah. Have I maybe said some things I shouldn't have? Yeah. But do we need more people who are just real people to be representatives of the real people? I think we do.
I think it's a great point. And I think what's to stop and go, you know what, we're all real humans. I don't know if that plays in DC. I think that would be great on the local and the state level. I think DC, they are so plastic and so just, they are commodities. They are very marketable, most of them, especially from at the Senate and above. But
I kind of wish, I mean, we mentioned, you know, at the state level, if you could tell me I can have one position right now without having to run, not do anything, that probably could have an immediate impact is like, give me the AG of California. If I didn't have to actually run, give me the AG of California. I am pulling all lawsuits that are trying to enforce California gun laws. I'm pulling a ton of lawsuits and a ton of enforcement. I am firing half the staff of Cal DOJ. I'm cleaning house.
I like it.
Rander for California AG 2028.
California AG and president of Argentina, it sounds like. Right, too often when we talk about politics, it's all blue, it's all red, one or the other. And guys tend to do that. That's what we do. Ford, Chevy. Oh, my God, Chevy, Ford.
Dodge.
We get Daniel Defense versus CMMG versus BCM, and we got to defend Glock. Like, the Glock guys have to defend Glock. And that trickles into every other area. And I think that's super unfortunate that we try to divide everything. And it's trickled, I think, into the different freedom organizations like the FPC, the Second Amendment Foundation, the GOA. And even once you start mentioning that, there's going to be guys typing away or gals typing away. You left mine out. We don't have to defend each of them like they are the Pittsburgh Steelers and we're defending our own. There is what I believe an overlap, a Venn diagram of what they each do. And I support a bunch of them, but if you were to force me, and guys love forcing each other to do this, which is your favorite, right now I think GOA is making a difference. And the cool thing, this is super, super cool, is they're coming to Tennessee. Jared, you excited about it?
This is a huge announcement. The Gun Owners of America are going to have their very first annual convention at the Knoxville Civic Center, August 17th and 18th. In a beautiful area of called Tennessee. And even though Knoxville is one of those, you know, anti-gun blue things you were just talking about, concealed carry has been approved, mainly because the mayor of Knox County, you might know him, Kane from the WWE, he's one of us. They were able to work together with the other powers that be, and the agreement was made. So come one, come all, come to Tennessee on August 17th and 18th, and you can protect yourself while you're doing it, and come say hi to me and Johnny and hopefully Anthony and everybody else.
These things are a lot of fun. Like if for viewers and listeners that have never been to one of these gun shows are absolutely amazing, and they're all a little bit different, but they're all the same in so many ways. You walk through the aisles, you see products that you don't need and products that you want, but you also get to see friends. And this is one of the main ways that the three of us get to hang out. Also, Anthony, what is the place of these shows that you see right now in 2024 of a gathering of people that are of like mind that don't see each other that often to get a walk around and look at products that could literally, without being too dramatic, save the lives of our children? Do you think there's value in the GOA coming to Knoxville?
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited. They pulled me aside like, hey, don't tell anybody, but GOA is going to do our first convention. And they told me at SHOT Show, which I was really excited. They were like, hey, you know, would you be willing to come out? I was like, absolutely. You guys tell me date and time, I'll be there. I love GOA. You asked, you know, what your favorite org is right now. My favorite org is GOA. I think there's a lot of amazing orgs, also SAF, FBC, but GOA is kind of my top pick. I know everybody there. I've spent a lot of time with a lot of the GOA top heads and all their attorneys. I know them really, really well. Amazing people. I'm excited for it. I think every, I guess, convention or gun show, whatever you want to call them, they all focus on different things and they do different things. I'm curious, you know, what GOA's take on it's going to be. It's, you know, one of the really nice things that they're doing is it's going to be open to, I think, the public. And as long as you're, is it just GOA members or is it just going to be public at large? Do you guys know?
Yeah, GOA members. And if you're not a member, you can join at the door. Yeah. $25 to be a member.
Yeah, which is, that's awesome. You know, I guess it's going to be their version of the NRA convention. A lot of people know SHOT Show, that, but that's an industry thing. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit. You know, SHOT Show is an industry only thing. That's probably the biggest one, but the public at large don't get access to that. And so I'm excited for the GOA one. I really enjoy going to these shows because I get to hang out with my friends. And also when you go to specific ones like this that GOA is doing, we get to interact with the audience and like-minded people. SHOT Show is a little bit different because it's so industry-based. Like, yeah, you'll run into some viewers and people, but a lot of people are there for their own agenda. They're there for companies, or they're already, you know, very much ingrained in the firearms community in some ways, but they're not the audience at large. So I'm excited, of course, to engage with the audience, and I'm sure we'll all be doing different things there. I'm sure GOA will maybe have us doing some speaking engagements or some things along that. We had talked about maybe doing a live podcast there, this podcast there, setting that up. So it's going to be fun. I'm really excited. I'm excited that they're finally doing one on their own. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am as well. And I think for me, this is, I like the way you said that, Anthony, is that it's kind of like SHOT Show, but for everybody, and everybody can come. For folks that have never been, and we're not trying to advertise it, like, we're just excited about it because these are our friends and they're also doing some awesome work. And it's in Knoxville, Tennessee, East Tennessee, baby. But yeah. I think what's exciting for me is there's going to be folks that have never been to a real show. They might have been to their local gun shows, which can be fun, but not like this, an actual industry event. And you walk around the aisles and you see things and you're just like, this is the best moment of my entire 2024. And you get a, like when you and I were at a show up in Milwaukee last fall, I got to hold some Staccatos that I had never got to see in person. And I think, okay, it's fun. It's a hobby. We all love it. But it's also, we can actually grow in our, again, the protection of our family, the protection of our own rights because of these. Jared, are you excited about the actual gear that's going to be on the tables?
Always. That's how I spend too much of my money, is from the gear on the tables. But for somebody like, I'm a people watcher. And for me, that's the best part of it. Like, I remember the first time I went to a convention, it might've been the NRA show back in the day. That's where I met The Undertaker. We would just happen to be taking a break because our backs are junk at the same pole, leaning over, complaining about the pain. And I looked over, it was Mark Calloway. So it's pretty cool who else is of like mind like we are and go to the same events we go to for the same reasons.
You heard it here first. Jared of Guns and Gadgets and The Undertaker sharing time on the pole at an event. I think that's absolutely fantastic. What is also fantastic, Super Tuesday is behind us. The lessons that we learned, I mean, I think there wasn't a lot of big surprises. For me, I thought one that was interesting was Nikki Haley, who is now, whoop, she is out of there, by Felicia. You know, a moment of silence for the military-industrial complex and their stock plummeting today. I don't know if it actually did, but it probably is in their hearts because she's no longer banging the war drum as a rhino that she is. But the interesting thing about Nikki Haley is that she carried Vermont, and Republican voters that went in voted for her. Anthony, what do you think about that, about Nikki carrying that? And what does that tell you about not just that state, but those Republicans that are up there?
I try not to glean a lot from that. I mean, I struggle with the whole Nikki Haley thing because she is so establishment. Like you said, she's so military industrial complex. No one who was really watching what was happening thought that she had a modicum of a chance of winning this. You know, yeah, she carried Vermont, but do I glean a lot from that? No, it just, I think maybe reveals the type of Republicans that are there that are voting for her, and maybe a little bit more establishment Republicans. And maybe Donald Trump has a little bit more work of trying to get the establishment Republicans out of Vermont to back him. But without the opportunity of Nikki Haley, I have no doubt that they'll probably still vote for Trump.
I used to live in Vermont, and I lived up there for 3 years, and I think there's like 11 Republicans up there, and apparently they all voted for Nikki Haley. And I just want to say this for our viewers and listeners is that, you know, I don't think we're here to promote or to, how about this? Let me say it this way. We're not here to come down on Nikki Haley, My problem with a 21-year-old son is when she is saying, let's put boots on the ground in Europe. Yeah. I'm like, no, that gets me twitchy. That makes my sphincter start tightening up. And it's a problem. It is a big, big problem. I'm also left bumfuzzled at what the word modicum means, but I expect no less from the armed scholar. Anthony's throwing out some fancy terms. Jared, what's your takeaway from Super Tuesday overall?
America is pissed, like we said earlier. They want the country to be run like a business. We have a bottom line. We have supposed to have a budget, we should only worry about. And this is going to anger some folks. We should only worry about our country. You know, we can worry about other things, but our main focus should be us. And folks on both sides of the aisle are starting to see that. More than they have in the last few years. And I also thought it was interesting yesterday that Joe Biden lost the Democrat primary in American Samoa.
Yeah, American Samoa. He did not. It is the first incumbent president since Jimmy Carter was out selling his peanuts, if you know what I mean, to not carry anything. Like, and so this is the one thing, and what's funny is there was under 100 voters. So under people are, if you missed it, Joe Biden took a break from sniffing children to go run in American Samoa, and he didn't carry it. It's absolutely hilarious. Did he find out it's under 100 voters? They didn't even get a modicum of voters out yesterday.
I have a question for you guys. I don't know how much interaction you guys have had with, you know, people, I guess, on the Democratic side, the liberal side, who maybe voted for Biden last time. I do. I have family members who did, and I remember having very strong conversations with them going into those elections, going into the first Trump election, and I have very close family. I'm not going to say who it is because I don't think she would appreciate me putting her out on social media. But
said it was a she.
Whatever. yeah. 50% of the nation could be them, or, you know, depending on what you believe on the, you know, if there's only two genders, you know, maybe whatever. It was interesting because there was a lot of discussion going into these last two elections about who I was voting for, why I was voting for them. First time I'd voted for Trump, not because necessarily agreed with all of his policies, but for me, a big part of it was the Supreme Court, the writing on the wall with some of the justices potentially passing or stepping down, and that came to fruition, and that was huge for us. And then going into that next election, that family member said, well, you were right. You called that, you know, you said you were voting for this reason, and it ended up coming to fruition. And during that next election, she voted for Biden. Now, having discussions with those individuals going into this election, even though they're Democrat, maybe they hold some liberal belief systems, even those people have shifted away. She told me point blank, in good conscience, I cannot vote for Biden again because he clearly is compromised. He's not running this country. And since he's been in control of this country, and this is coming from a Democrat in California. So I don't know what interactions, like, have you guys had a lot of discussions with maybe people like mine, even on the Democratic side, who's saying, hey, I'm not voting for Biden? Because I think that's a very interesting mental shift where people are moving away from the hard party line, even on the blue side.
Yeah, I have a lot of folks in my family back home in Massachusetts are, you know, dyed blue. A lot of it is, you know, from the Kennedy days where they'll vote blue no matter what. But I have had some conversations recently with some folks that are still up in that area. And one of which does not like the attitude of Donald J. Trump. Yeah. Not the fact that what he did for the country, because she even said that, you know, she had more money back then and her income and quality of life was better, but ... Twitter, mean tweets. I think we're going to see more people this time around think rationally rather than emotionally. And I think the country needs that desperately.
I hope so. I really do. I mean, one of the things that I think is a challenge is seeing 144,000 votes counted in the middle of the night, or the other precinct where they were covering over the windows to hide the counting. And that makes me nervous. So all of this, everything that's about this conversation of 2024 and the election is all presupposed. There's a presupposition that the elections are actually fair. Y'all know I wear a tinfoil hat. I think it's interesting on Super Tuesday when all of social media goes down, and that's a conversation for another show, but I think it's absolutely spooky. So we are assuming that the elections are going to be honest and fair. If they are, this is interesting. I had lunch with Dad over the weekend, and he said that he had watched a show or read a report about one precinct and the folks that were voting for the child sniffer, they were specifically voting against Trump. These are Dems.
Yes.
In 2024, saying, I'm not voting for Joe Biden. I can't stand him. And I think he's a child abusing criminal. But I hate Donald Trump so much. So I think that Donald Trump derangement syndrome is legit. And there are people that are going to vote blue. They're not just voting blue, no matter who. They're going to stay blue because of who, because it's Donald J. Trump. Anthony, you think people are still hating Trump as much as they were a couple years ago?
Like I said, I think it just depends on the pockets that you're in. I think I spent some time up in Sacramento this last weekend going to a concert. And it was very interesting because, like I said, I'm in a red area of California and I haven't seen a mask in I don't know how long. When I went up to Sacramento, just the brain parasite that was still going on. There was still masks at the concert. There were people with a lot of blue and purple and pink hair everywhere. And it's interesting. So I think those people that are just so deep into that system will vote that party line, anybody but Trump, even if they don't necessarily have a lot of faith in Biden anymore. And I think those, especially in California, those are the same people that will still vote for Newsom, even though he's absolutely destroyed our state. They just can't give it up. They just will not take their team losing. But I think when you get to other pockets, like I mentioned here in my area, where you might, you still have a lot of people who are blue and vote blue, like my family members, they are saying, and I have almost complete faith that they're not going to vote for Biden because they just cannot deal with the gas prices that we deal with here, the taxes that we're paying, the insane unrest that we're seeing, the potential of cataclysmic international wars that they're worried about, and they're raising their kids and have to worry about their kids having to deal with that border crisis. I mean, just so much stuff that's on Biden's ledger that he's done over these last 4 years. I think there's a lot of people, even on the left, who just can't accept that.
I'm going to throw a challenge out there to my mother, to see if she actually watches like she says she does. But B, come on over, Mom. You are now retired. You've put in all your life working as a nurse and helping people. Now that you're retired, let's take care of the country in your retirement. Come on over. Come to the dark side.
Well, I think it's a challenge. Shout out to Jared's Ma. But one of the challenges, one of the challenges is that that I don't know if I believe you, Anthony. I really don't. And I want to push back because the White House said this is the strongest economy that we've ever had. And, I choose to believe.
For a second, I thought you were going to be serious. So I was like, oh, my, is he really going to White House? That's sarcasm, everybody, because if you're listening to the White House report,
I choose to believe the White House. I tell you what I also believe is our sponsor today. I absolutely love them. It's blackoutcoffee.com. Got good news for you. If you use the code Liberty, LIBERTY, for folks in Alabama, that's how you spell it. 20% off your first order. Sorry, Alabama, to pick on you. At least you're not Mississippi. Jared, Roll Tide. Love y'all out there in Alabama. We love you. Jared, what's your favorite flavor of Blackout Coffee?
Well, let's roll into what was part of the topic today, the No Compromise blend for Gun Owners of America that Blackout does. Every time you buy one of those items, regardless if it's a bag of coffee or a box of K-Cups, every single item, Blackout Coffee donates $2 per item right back to Gun Owners of America, and they do that monthly. And I think that's a huge way for us to give back to the groups that are fighting for us and enjoy some of the best coffee on the planet.
I start my day every day with Blackout Coffee. That is the truth, and y'all know that. Whether you want whole bean, ground, or the K-Cups, they got you covered. I recommend, with enthusiasm, the blueberry crumble with a splash of heavy cream. Blackoutcoffee.com. Check them out. Use code LIBERTY for 20% off your first order. All right, this is a story that's been around for a couple years now, but he's now under indictment, and Anthony can walk us through super legal mumbo-jumbo if we need to, but let's just say this. He's in a little bit of hot water. His name is Dexter Taylor. He's out of Brooklyn, New York. one of my favorite YouTubers, the Liberty Doll, she's been covering this pretty closely. So this Dexter Taylor guy, he's a gentleman in Brooklyn. He is, and they're calling him a gunsmith. He's putting guns together, and he's doing the 80% things. He's doing the ghost guns. I know ghost guns get really, people get really wound up about that. But New York said no. They said he tried to make a gun, a ghost gun, and the state of New York said no, no, no. He is under 37 indictments. He's 51 years old. And that's literally all we know about him right now. What he's facing is 18 years in prison, Dexter Taylor out of Brooklyn. And this is just now hitting. It's been going on for a couple of years. They called it an arsenal when they found out that he had 13 ghost guns. Anthony, do you think this has legs from the outside looking in? I know you haven't read all the court transcripts or anything that his lawyers have seen. But can you see 37 counts coming in for a guy with 13 ghost guns?
So I'm not super familiar. This is actually the first time I'm hearing it. And that just shows you how much stuff we always have to cover. This is the first time hearing of it. Doesn't surprise me. You said it's out of New York. Does not surprise me. If you ask me, do I think he could get all 37 counts in New York because of this quote unquote, you know, political buzzword of ghost guns? Absolutely. I think what people need to understand, so there's a lot we need to get into this because this interplays with what's going on right now at the ATF's unfinished frames and receivers rule, which is currently up for Supreme Court cert and review right now. And, you know, the interplay with those federal rules and how states can be more restrictive, because in California also we have similar laws that New York has, or they call them here in California precursor parts. So in California, we have firearms precursor parts, and you to now purchase them and going forward, they have to be registered and serialized, and you have to go through a licensed precursor part vendor that then runs the background check, because they treat now these 80 percenters as actual firearms in their own right. And I'm sure maybe New York has the same. I'm not super familiar with all of New York stuff, but usually California and New York's laws run almost identical. It's interesting when you see these states treat. Again, they're treating this unfinished piece of plastic, these parts, as firearms in their own right, saying the fact that your mere possession of this unfunctional piece of plastic can then result in multiple counts of felony charges against you to not only strip you of your rights for the rest of your life, but then put you in prison for the rest of your life. Those are the type of people we're dealing with. And I mentioned earlier, you know, the brain virus that is some of the things that goes on. California, New York, and all these states suffer from that brain virus to the point where they are treating pieces of plastic like this. And the ATF is not helping with their rule on unfinished frames and receivers. And the hope is that we can get the Supreme Court to say something. But even within that own right, that would only deal specifically with the ATF's own rules. It would not necessarily deal with any state's restrictions on those parts itself. It would have to be litigated and challenged on the state's version of that. So that's a mess to me. I've seen it. It's happened. There's people who've been charged with these types of things in California with their possession of so-called ghost guns. And again, a ghost gun is just a piece of plastic. We're talking about polymer 80s or 80 percenters that have been lawful to own in some states for a really long time. It's still lawful for you to own in California. They just want you to go through their hoops and register it so they can put you on a list. That's probably the true crime that they are so upset about, is a lot of the times you can still possess these. They just want you to be on their list. But the fact that you don't go put yourself on the list voluntarily, well, now you're clearly a criminal and we're going to try to put you in prison for the rest of your life. It's unfortunate. I'll have to look into this specific case and do a little bit more research on what, because again, I don't know all the facts behind this. It's unfortunate, and I hope he gets help.
Real quick. So for those who are listening and aren't really up to speed on this, you have been able to make your own firearm from whatever you choose in this country longer than this has been a country. It has never been a problem until, like Anthony said, when these states on an individual level were starting to push registries. They want to know who has what and what you have and where you live. And that's the main thing that's pissing these deep blue anti-gun states off. New York is definitely going to try to screw Dexter Taylor as much as they can. They've also gone after individual companies who are selling primarily, you know, P80 products and the like. I know New York was going after a handful of companies and demanding their customer lists. Give us your customer list and we'll drop charges against you so we can go after the individuals who have these items in our state. IndieGuns is one who has vehemently pushed back, will not give them any information, while other companies have bowed down. So yeah, they're going after something in these states that is 100% legal, always has been. The Second Amendment actually says that the government can't pass laws in violation of the Second Amendment. And I want to say this because people need to realize this. We feel in the Second Amendment community like things need to move faster, but we are winning mostly at the state level at a rate that has never happened before. The federal level takes a little longer, but keep supporting those that support you, GOA, FPC, SAF, you name them, your state orgs too, don't forget them, because that is who is going to be pushing back on all of these cases, especially in New York. New York's about to get their teeth kicked in with a few cases that are going on.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about cases like this is actually reading the words and the articles. I love reading with the mainstream media, how they will make certain things look super spooky. They're calling Dexter Taylor's stash an arsenal. County prosecutors, this is directly from the NBC New York website. County prosecutors say the man had, dun, 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 4 assault weapons, 5 handguns, and 4 rifles completely assembled and stashed. This is absolutely fantastic. The Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez said, quote, "This defendant allegedly acquired a massive arsenal of homemade ghost guns that are as real and dangerous as traditional firearms," close quote. Yeah, Eric, you know why they're as real and dangerous as regular firearms? Because they're firearms. I absolutely love it's a massive arsenal. Jared, if I was to tell you that 4 assault weapons and 5 handguns is an arsenal, how would that make the average Tennessean look?
Like individual armies.
My question is that all he had under his bed? Like, is that just what was under his bed? Or, I mean, on my floor right now, I got that. Like,
that's absolutely fantastic. I love seeing the left just lose their bleeping minds. I watched a comedian today that I will not name because I'm not giving him any airtime, but he was like, I just wish that the two-way community were honest. I'm like, okay, you got my intention. He said, I just wish they were honest. If they could just look at the camera and say, I like guns because they make me feel cool. He said, then I could support that. He said, but when they start saying it's your constitutional right, I have a problem with that. And I got kind of twitchy. I was like, he's saying, wait, it is your constitution. That's me. That's exactly what I say. And he said, he immediately went, you're going to need nuclear weapons to be able to fight us. I'm like, us? They know us here. It's we, the people. And I think it's absolutely fantastic to go into those kind of threads and look at the comments immediately. What country do they go to? Vietnam, where a bunch of rice farmers kicked a lot of powerful people right in the teeth. Anthony, what do you think?
We just saw the 20-year war on terror in the Middle East. Dudes with flip-flops and AKs. Just messed up our military industrial complex. Like, I mean, now they got tanks and ARs and stuff because of Biden, but let's call a spade a spade. Like, if you think, I mean, and Biden has made that comment also, it's crazy you have your president who's saying, oh, we got F-15s and we'll yada yada yada. I mean, cool, if you're saying you're going to start bombing your own nation, then we got bigger issues. And but they underestimate the ability of armed civilians and the ability that they have to fight back against a government. And that's what our nation was literally founded on, was a bunch of guys rallying behind a cause, picking up their arms that they owned at the time to go serve. You know, that's...
Yeah, there's nothing more American, to Jared's point, there's nothing more American than making your own firearms. The colonialists, they were hanging out in the blacksmith shop, and you can go up to Williamsburg, Virginia and watch them. And they're still making rifles, long rifles, in that same blacksmith shop. And that is America. pissed off citizens standing up to tyranny.
I want to like also go back to something, because when we talk about these ghost guns, they love to use that term. But when you look at the policy concerns that they put forward when they passed these laws, for example, in California, when they passed their ban on precursor parts, the whole policy concern behind that is, oh, criminals use these. They're so used at a rate that crimes, you know, they use these unfinished frames of receivers. When you actually look at the statistics, either on a state level or national level, those numbers are greatly skewed because they use this umbrella term ghost guns or unfinished whatever. And they don't just, you're not just talking about polymer 80s or 80% arms or any of those. What they love to do that with that also is firearms that are stolen and have their serial numbers scratched off and things like that as well, which actually do make up a large number of all of these crimes that they try to attribute to why we need to pass this public policy law or whatever. So it's funny they throw these buzzwords out there, and for the untrained individual, they go, oh, we're just talking about these pieces of plastic. Or they also try to claim that, you know, it's 3D printed items, that they also make up a large number of these firearms that are found in association with these crimes. Most of the time, it's not. It's firearms that were stolen and have their serial numbers scratched off. So don't let them fool you with that public policy concern that, you know, that they love to throw out there and clutch their pearls and say, we got to get these off the street.
The biggest public policy we need to get back to is actually keeping criminals responsible, hold them responsible, because they're the ones doing it. Shocker. It's not the good guys, good gals. You know, it's not the 90-year-old grandma going to the store. It's the criminals who actually do it. It's actually in the name. Like, if you look up the word criminal, it's like they do not follow the law. Inanimate objects don't do anything by themselves. It's the evil in people's hearts and minds. And we need to remember that, because that's why this country is spiraling right now, is because we don't hold criminals responsible.
Evil in the hearts and minds. And that's we were having a big conversation with some friends the other night, and there was some Dems in the room, and I don't like just dividing people into one box or the other. I can just say it was a mixed group, and somebody was like, we need to do this law and that law. And I went, murder's already illegal. Like, we already wrote that down at the city, state, and federal level. Like, it's against the rules. We have that rule. It's already a felony. Criminals don't follow. It's what is in their heart. I tell you what is in my heart is the joy I get when 13 guns is called an arsenal. That makes me so excited. My friend, as I'm sitting here looking at him on the screen, he has an arsenal. I don't even want to know what's in that box, but I assume that box back there is absolutely loaded. I tell you what else was loaded was the SCOTUS 9-0, Jared. Was that a stack deck or what? Well, did Freedom win this week?
Freedom absolutely won. Just about everybody, even dyed blue Democrat pundits saw a major decision coming this way. What it came down to, folks who aren't in the know, is the state of Colorado decided that they were going to use a clause that was put into the Constitution to keep the folks who were focused on insurrection back in the days of the what war?
I believe we call that war the war between the states.
Between the states. And they used that in an attempt to keep Donald Trump off of the ballot. And what they were trying to do is to be like the cross bearer, if you will, so that other states would follow, thus taking the, you know, what is now going to be the Republican candidate for president off the ballot in some states. So the states, if this were to stand, would be able to control federal elections based off of emotion. And to their credit, even the, I listened to a lot of the argument, even like Ketanji Brown Jackson and some of the blue judges like Sotomayor and Kagan, even they got it right, saying that, you know, no, this isn't going to be able to fly. Although what was concerning is when they were getting into the brass tacks of it, all of the female justices seemed to think that it shouldn't just be Congress who would control who is held under this clause. So that was an odd divide between male and female there. But they did get it right, 9-0, that we the people are the ones who decide who's going to be the president of this country, not individual state legislators.
Anthony, where are you at with that? Because for me, my big question is this. I don't understand the West really well, and I know that, Anthony, you're a little closer to there. I was picking on Alabama earlier. I love the South. I love everybody in the South except for Mississippi. But what the heck is going on in Colorado? Like, I don't know a lot about it. I've been all over it as a guest and as a visitor. But what is going on out there? Is it that, and I know we're lumping an entire group of people into one box, but is it that blue in that state, Anthony?
No, I think what you're seeing is the same thing you see, I mean, in California or any of these other states where you have these metropolitan areas where their politics bleed and start to dominate the entire state. Of course, you can't just, you know, paint a single state as entirely blue because there's obviously going to be pockets like in California that are deeply red, but the big metropolitan politics bleed into the legislature to where they do stuff like this. So, I mean, doesn't surprise me. It was kind of surprising that Colorado was the first one that you know, that's something you would maybe try to, you would see California try first. You know, it wouldn't shock me if California did that first. I mean, going back to what the Supreme Court said in their decision, it was a 9-0 unanimous decision in the ultimate judgment of the case, which was interesting too, to see how that played out in social media, because a lot of people were, we need to get Thomas and Alito off the court because they've corrupted and they're so old, yada, yada, yada. And I saw some stuff was like, but they're younger than Biden. And also this was a decision that was unanimous in the ultimate judgment. Now, so for people who don't know and don't want to read the opinion, it was a per curiam opinion, which essentially means it was just in the name of the court. Traditionally, what you would have happen is if it was a majority opinion, you would have a specific author or a specific justice would author that opinion, and he would write it on behalf of the court, or she would write it on behalf of the court. And then the other judges that are concurring in that opinion would join in on the opinion. This instead, because it's so politically charged, it was per curiam, just written in the name of the court. We don't necessarily know who authored it. In some ways we do, because as I said, it was 9-0 in the ultimate judgment of the case. That did not mean that all the Supreme Court justices necessarily agreed on all the things that was in that opinion. You had five of the judges, which we actually do know who they were. It's because of how some of the concurrence were written. It was Thomas, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, and Roberts were the five who are part of the full opinion, the full per curiam. And then you had a concurrence written by Amy Coney Barrett. And then you had a concurrence on partial of the judgment by Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sotomayor, and Kagan, which again isn't surprising. What you see in those concurrences, first, let's address Amy Coney Barrett because she continues to concern me. In her concurrence, it was saying, hey, I'm concurring in part one and part 2B of the opinion, which is essentially just the ultimate resolution of the case that, hey, states do not have this power under the 14th Amendment. Only Congress has this power. What they did was improper. She and the liberals on the court wanted to leave the opinion to that. They just wanted to say, hey, you don't have this power under this section. It does not authorize that power. A state cannot, you know, disqualify someone on the federal side. Let's just leave it to that. The five majority went a little bit further and tried to outline what that legislative process would look like for Congress to put something in place like that, you know, and what that would look like. They didn't like that the court went the extra step. They said, hey, you know, that wasn't before us. You're not supposed to expand that far. We're upset about that. Amy Coney Barrett and her concurrence went on a whole diatribe about how she thought it was improper that the court went that far, that they're sowing division within the nation right now. The court's job is to, especially right now, she said, is to kind of quell and soften some of those things, not light the fire even more, which she thought that this opinion will do. So that was really interesting. I recommend you guys go read the opinion because it was really interesting, her taking that position, trying to take this middle ground of like, hey, let's all be together, conservatives and liberals on the court. Let's not try to, you know, incite a bunch of negativity. And then the liberals on the court were upset that the majority went further beyond just saying, hey, you can't do this. They didn't like the additional process that they put in place. So really, really interesting opinion, but the ultimate outcome of it is all nine of the Supreme Court judges said, no, states can't do this. They don't have the power to do this.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see something that actually makes sense come out of Washington, D.C., because so much we see today, it literally makes no sense. We see gas prices and, you know, everybody knows how bad it is. And then the White House says it's the strongest economy of all time. We already covered that. But then to see something like this, it actually makes sense. Because today, we've seen it more and more. It's not always just been today, but we see the weaponization of the three-letter agencies. And we see that in all different areas. I think the one that really got me for the first time was seeing when the Obama IRS started going after the Christian groups and going after the nonprofits that were of a religious nature that weren't on his side, a weaponization of the federal government. There's a story coming out this week out of Illinois. It's a weaponization of the local government, not just the federal government. Dalton, Illinois. That's a fancy word. How about Dalton? That's a real nice one. We have Anthony, the Arm Scholar, who talks super, super fancy. He'll like that one. this board there, it's the village board. They're trying to launch an investigation. I don't know if y'all saw this. Her name is Tiffany Henyard, or I don't even know how to say it. Henyard or Henyard. Tiffany, I'm going to call her Tiffany. She is the self-described super mayor. She calls herself the super mayor. And during her tenure, she has weaponized her own local government. She's in charge of the money. And anyone that doesn't donate to her war chest, she will shutter or close down their business. She also has used a $1 million allotment in her personal security detail and used them to go after her political enemies. How many enemies can you have in Dalton, Illinois? I don't know. But lavish trips, all sorts of stuff. So she's going after her opponents. She's going after anybody that won't give her more money. And then the board, the Dalton Village board, said, hey, how about we look into her financial records? She vetoes that resolution. Jared, have you ever seen a local politician be weaponized?
I haven't, but it's almost like she's mirroring everything that's going on the federal stage, right? You have a political person, Joe Biden, who many think has been persecuting his opposition by indicting and having all kinds of cases brought against Donald Trump before the election. So it's almost like things will continue until, you know, things are stopped or corrected or people are held responsible.
She spent thousands on an ice rink. I mean, that is fantastic. Why did the super mayor need an ice rink? I don't know. And this story, like the more you get into it, the better it gets. I know it's a crazy world. I know this is a problem. I know there is a $2 million deficit in that village. And here's the hard part. This is the one that chaps my lips, is that some of the local guys that have been working for the city, there was some tree trimmers and some parking lot clearers, and these are private companies. They did the work, and now she won't pay them because they're out of money. Anthony, how important is it to vote? Do we get what we vote for? That's my question. Do we get what we vote for? Did the Dalton Village folks get what they voted for?
I struggle sometimes with that narrative because coming from someone in California, I get that all the time in my comment section. Like, oh, you guys got what you vote for. I didn't vote for them. I didn't vote for Newsom. I didn't vote for any of these people. So I don't think you can draw that blanket. Now, at a local level, it's probably much more likely when that's that small of a pool of voters that you might have got what you voted for. As you scale it up, of course, to, you know, state level and national level, I don't really like that narrative. But it just shows you that even at the local level, you can't always trust the government. I know that's a controversial thing to say, guys, but you know, you probably shouldn't always just blindly trust the government. I mean, we're seeing that. I mean, shocker, someone in a power position is using their office in an improper manner to line their pockets and do things improper. We just saw Newsom get hit with his whole Panera Bread thing that he had going on, where he's given side deals and exemptions in state legislative language for his buddy who owns all these Panera Breads. And then now all of a sudden, since they got caught, they're saying, oh, wait, never mind. We had our attorneys look at it again, and they don't fall under that exemption after all these stories blew up. Doesn't surprise me. It's just
shocker.
It shows you guys how vigilant you have to be and keep an eye on, even at your local level. I highly always recommend that people go to their own city council meetings and engage with them as well, because if unchecked, they still will do things wrong.
I think for me, because I'm always looking for the entertainment in any story, I absolutely love that they're like, hey, can we get in the FBI? Like, they've actually asked the FBI to come in and investigate her. And she's like, no, I vetoed that. That is some banana republic nonsense. All right, I want to say this, and I'm so excited about this. On our very first episode, we talked about Paul Harrell. If you're new, Paul Harrell is a YouTuber, and he is one of the best among us. He is an OG in the YouTube community. He does a lot of education, and he is like watching a warm campfire. He talks about freedom. He talks about guns. He talks about information that is beyond valuable, and he is facing a very tough, and a lot of folks already know this, but a very tough cancer diagnosis. And so a massive group, including the three of us, got together and did a fundraiser for he and his wife. And I'm really, really excited about that. TriStar Trading, which all three of us get to work with, TriStar Trading Co. right here in Tennessee, they sold shirts. We all wore them in the first episode. And so I have, and this is the first time this has ever been publicly said, I have talked to the folks at TriStar, and the total fundraiser amount is going to be announced this week, $86,426, $86,000. And that is absolutely fantastic. I'm so proud of this community, the viewers and the folks out watching, the folks listening right now. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you for supporting this. And somebody stopped me. They said, Johnny, why are you doing this? I said to say thank you to a friend, to say thank you to this guy who worked for a decade to educate us. It's just a little bit, just as a little bit of a gift. But Anthony, how excited are you to hear that 86,000 going to Paul and his wife?
It's awesome. Again, thank you to Johnny and TriStar for doing that. It's the least that we could do to help Paul and his family and to say thank you for everything that he's done. I know we've mentioned it a couple times on the podcast, but we stand on the shoulders of guys like Paul Harrell, who built this community for us on YouTube and on social media. It was really cool to see the response on my channel when I announced it. And, you know, we got to see some of the tracking numbers, and I could see your guys' orders coming in for Paul, and as it just kept going up and up. And I'm very grateful for all my viewers and listeners, for everybody that bought Paul's shirt and supporting it. It's just awesome to see that response, and hopefully it helps them however they decide they needed to use it. I know there was maybe they were going to donate to a fundraiser or something like that. There was some discussion, but yeah, it just was really awesome to see that. And again, thank you to TriStar for doing that. They do my merch, they do Jared's merch, they do Johnny's merch, they do a lot of stuff for the guys in the community beyond anything we could ever ask. And it's really cool that they jumped in and helped that with Paul as well. So Jared, what'd you see on your channel? Cause I know I got to see my back end as I was watching it again. I was shocked by the response.
Yeah. We had quite a few folks from my side that jumped in hard, and it's extremely humbling to be able to be part of, you know, the team that were able to do something for the bigger cause. And it just shows you the power of our community. You know, we might have some disagreements all the time, but when push comes to shove and it's time to do the right thing, we always do the right thing. And I think that's a good part for, you know, the greater community out there in the world to see. You know, we're not all bad people. You know, we do have hearts, and it's good to see.
We're not all bad people, although we have talked about skeletons in the closet and some hard-hitting news from American Samoa. All right. Y'all put your tinfoil hats on. We're not going to hold you to this. This is not on the record. This is not going to be written down.
It's not anywhere on the record, but it's just on recording.
That's the lawyer speaking. The lawyer said it is on recording. This is just for fun. A little bit of tinfoil time. Now that we're through Super Tuesday, we can kind of get a pretty good idea of where we are headed. Before we get to the big one, the big show, Anthony, any predictions? What's going to happen? Crazy? You don't have to be accurate, but any crazy predictions? What is the tinfoil prediction of what is coming this spring and summer in American politics?
I'm always hesitant but theoretically, tinfoil. I don't think Biden makes it to the election. I don't think that's very controversial to say. Either he's removed or some sort of health crisis pops up and he's going to be replaced either by Big Mike or Gavin Newsom, maybe a combination of both. I think if the left was smart, they would run someone like Tulsi, Instead, I think if they really wanted to have a chance, they would run someone a little bit more neutral like Tulsi, but I don't think they are. I think they'll run someone like Newsom or Big Mike. So that's where I think we're going. I would not be surprised if there are some other larger issues that pop up in between now and then. We're seeing these so-called cyber attacks and shut down of social media happening a lot more frequently.
Now you're talking tinfoil. Like, you were all like serious and you threw in the word allegedly and theoretically because you know that every word that you say is going to be used in court against you. I'm out there flying under the radar a little bit more. Jared, you like that? You like that talking about some tinfoil and the social media getting shut down on Super Tuesday?
Yeah, I don't think that was a random issue. I don't think it was a random issue that all AT&T customers in major metropolitan areas lost service. I think those were tests.
The question I have for everybody, and just think about this, why was it every social media except for X? Why was X not the only one? Why was X the only one that was operating? Is it a coincidence or was it because of the owner of X?
I think it's at least me. This is my hat. I think Elon has been more open for freedom of speech on the platform. And I think people are starting to, you know, if I was going to shut down somebody, it would be somebody who was obviously pushing a certain narrative and didn't open up any recourse for anybody else. But I think that's going to ramp up as we get closer to November. And I think the biggest thing we all need to look out for is who will Donald Trump pick for his vice president.
Who's your crazy? We're not holding to this. Yeah. This is just for fun. Who is your dark horse?
So I've had conversations with folks on the inside who know Donald Trump. And I think what his choice was originally has changed. And one of the names Anthony just mentioned has met with Donald Trump about a potential in Tulsi Gabbard. There's been a few people who have met with DJT for his running mate. But to have somebody like a Tulsi Gabbard or a Vivek Ramaswamy is somebody who would be able to pull in the folks who might not like Donald Trump but want to get on board, and he needs a secondhand person who is able to maybe mend some of the fences that need mending that he's not able to do because some people just hate him because of who he is.
Anthony, don't be the lawyer. Tear your law degree in half just for 7 seconds. Who's your dark horse? Who is the one that you think he might do? And you don't have to be in reality. Who's the fun one? Who should he pick as his VP?
Bugs Bunny.
A dark horse? I think Vivek. I don't think it's going to be Vivek or Vivek. I know people get upset about how you pronounce his name. I don't think he will, but I think maybe that is a smarter to get the... Because when you look at how Vivek ran his campaign, it was very much new age social media podcasts, ground level advocacy for him. I think that was smart, and he won over a lot of people that way. He's going to have a cabinet position, I think, with Trump regardless. So I think that's a dark horse. I personally wish, I hope Tulsi is not the second in command. I have a lot of issues with her. I have a lot of issues with her statements about the Second Amendment and her position on the Second Amendment. And 100%. Trump already does not have a great record in his own right on the Second Amendment. I think if you give them that 1-2 punch of Trump and Tulsi, I don't think that's good for us going forward. I get Tulsi is allegedly been kicked out of her party, and now she's in some ways claiming that she's a little bit more right of center, and I think in some ways she said that she's more pro 2A now, and I saw she was at the tactical games and all that and
finished number two.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, but I think that's also one of those things where we've talked about it a lot. You can be a gun owner and not be pro 2A. Mm-hmm. People need to really understand that. Just because a politician says I own guns or I go hunting does not mean they are pro 2A. Do not be fooled by that. Don't be fooled by the Instagram posts of them wearing plate carriers and looking really hot with her AR-15 and all that stuff. Don't be fooled by the fact that she hangs out with certain veteran companies and goes on certain podcasts. Do not be fooled by that. Look at her track record. Look at what she has said and done in the past. That I glean way more from that than anything else. That's kind of a diatribe against Tulsi Gabbard. And
she's a politician.
Yep, she's a politician. Don't be fooled.
Yeah, and that's a scary thing is when you have folks that say one thing out of one side of their mouth. And as we talked on the last episode or two episodes ago, we talked about politicians who all they have certain things they have to do. They got to go to the working man and go to the steel mill or go to the glass plant. And they got to do a photo op while wearing khaki pants or wearing blue jeans. They got to do that. They got to meet the military. The other thing, they've got to go do the hunting thing.
Who's your pick, Anthony?
For what?
You didn't say who's your pick.
I think it's a dark horse that I'd be okay with.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Sarah Palin. I think that would be a lot of fun, a whole lot of fun. That's my dark horse.
I can see him from my backyard.
I can see, yeah. I can see victory right out of my backyard. Absolutely incredible. Yeah, and I think again, to my point, is that I think politicians, they've got to do that hot garbage of go do the hunting picture, and just because they fire guns and just because they're quote-unquote pro-2A. Never forget, Joe Biden is by a shotgun pro-Second Amendment, quote-unquote pro-Second Amendment. Yep. This is the Liberty Lounge podcast. We've been all over the place today. We've been to American Samoa. We've been to District of Columbia. We've been to Brooklyn, and we've been to Colorado. No qualifications, no commentary. All I want from each of you all is one name. Tell me the name of your favorite founding father, Anthony.
Give me Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin. Jared, who you taking?
Papa George Washington.
Papa George Washington. I'll take those two. That is a 1-2 punch. Absolutely incredible. However you found us, we are thankful that you did. To the viewers and the listeners, this is the Liberty Lounge podcast, and we'll see you soon.